Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, Jim, and two of them actually give some credit to the mainstream media. So note this day in journalistic history. Let's start with the good. It is a follow-up to yesterday's good martini, and that was the State Department Inspector General's report excoriating former Secretary of State and presumptive Democratic presidential nominee Hillary Clinton for her flouting of the rules regarding the preservation of her time at the State Department and using the private server and the private email and all sorts of things, and basically explaining how she deliberately worked around the rules, not just ignored them. Many different media outlets actually jumping on this story and hammering Clinton for her conduct. This is some of the Washington Post editorial. Hillary Clinton's use of a private email server while Secretary of State has been justifiably criticized as an error in judgment. What the new report from the State Department Inspector General makes clear is that it was not a casual oversight. Mrs. Clinton had plenty of warnings to use official government communications methods so as to make sure that her records were properly preserved and to minimize cybersecurity risks. She ignored them. The 83-page report declares that beginning in late 2005 and continuing through 2011, the department revised its foreign affairs manual and issued various memoranda specifically discussing the obligation to use department systems in most circumstances and identifying the risks of not doing so. Mrs. Clinton didn't. They talked about a new electronic system called SMART that she refused to use. A staff member raised concerns with another official about her personal email server. The staff was instructed, quote, never to speak of the secretary's personal email system again. It is still the Washington Post, so in the last paragraph they slip in the, well, not illegal behavior, dot, dot, dot. So they're still trying to carry her water because they want her to be the next president. But, Jim, they're still laying the hammer. The LA Times and other media outlets are doing it too. And this may just add even more juice to the story since we know there's more investigations still to come.
Two kind of big ramifications out of this, Greg. The first being that the hope for the Clinton campaign that this story was going to go away, that eventually, like, you've heard all that hullabaloo. You know, Bernie Sanders said he was tired of hearing about it. Aren't you tired of hearing about it, too? Isn't it time to move on? Well, no. We're not going to move on. This points to, at the very least, a series of deliberate violations of policy, if not law. The other thing is, this can only end a couple of ways for Hillary Clinton. And right now, I'm sure many listeners are saying, jail! It can only end with the FBI recommending charges or the FBI not recommending charges. I think in light of this, it gets harder and harder for the FBI to say, nope, violations of law here, no big deal, considering the prosecutions of people for even, you know, seemingly innocuous events like taking work home with them that happens to have classified information. You know, you can't say that the laws of handling classified information just don't apply to Hillary Clinton. So the FBI is probably going to recommend something. The next question then is, you know, what does the Department of Justice do about it? And the Department of Justice can do a couple of different things. Probably the most likely, the safest scenario is just try to slow walk this and just say, you're reviewing it. Except the Washington Post editorial says, boy, we hope the FBI will give their report soon so the American people have a fully informed view of what happened here. The administration can slow walk it, but at that point, you just have this potential indictment hanging over Hillary Clinton's head. That's pretty bad for her. Now, but the scenario that a lot of cynical people think is that, well, the Department of Justice and Attorney General Lynch will look at this and say, it's bad, but it's not bad enough to indict. We'll give her a slap on the wrist. You know, tisk, tisk, Hillary Clinton, don't do this again and choose not to indict. The widespread speculation is that FBI Director Comey would resign under that scenario, which in my mind is almost worse than an actual indictment because you could always be acquitted. You know, the jury could always find, actually, she didn't break the law. There's no way to appeal a resignation of an FBI director in what he claims to be a politicization of justice and a determination to let Hillary Clinton get away with crime. So this story is not going to go away for Hillary Clinton, and the State Department's Inspector General report makes it tougher for anyone else to conclude, oh, nothing really important happened here.
I also get really frustrated at the Bob Woodward argument. Well, she didn't intend to make classified information vulnerable on her email system. But first of all, that doesn't matter in one of the aspects of the law. Just keeping classified information in an unsecured place, such as that server, would make her guilty. Secondly, I don't think the argument I was deliberately trying to avoid FOIA requirements, which is also a violation of the law, is a legitimate explanation for what she did. So the explanation that intent matters here a lot, it just isn't true.
Also keep in mind, a lot of this is, you know, I had no idea that video of drone strikes was classified. Really? I mean, if you genuinely believe that, you're probably too dumb to be Secretary of State, never mind President of the United States.
All right. Well, at least she keeps good company. Let's move on to the bad martini now. And Terry McAuliffe, who was our good martini earlier in the week as a result of him being under FBI investigation. Jim, you have done a lot of good reporting on this that's been noted elsewhere. And one of the things you've pointed out is Terry McAuliffe brazenly lying about suggesting that he didn't know this Chinese donor, Wang Wenliang, and saying, I just knew some guys from his company up in New Jersey. I don't think we ever actually met. Oh, no, it turns out he invited him and attended a meeting and a fundraiser at Hillary Clinton's private home in Washington, D.C. So they did, in fact, meet. You also have exposed the fact that this guy, while he does have a U.S. green card, is not only a Chinese citizen, but a member of the Chinese parliament, which is pretty sure he's not allowed to kick into Terry McAuliffe or anyone else's campaign here.
For those wondering, the law talks about an agent of foreign principle, which basically means, are you an employee of a foreign government or are you acting on a foreign government's behalf? Now, I'm sure there's somewhere right now, Terry McAuliffe's lawyers are trying to argue, look, just because he's a member of the Chinese parliament doesn't mean he's acting on behalf of the Chinese government. I'm Lionel Hutz. yeah, I just have a very hard time buying that. You know, the idea that this guy is going to start donating to American politicians in opposition to the Chinese government or against the will of the Chinese government seems exceptionally unlikely. And this appears, one, I don't know about you, Greg, I'm kind of baffled at how a member of the Chinese parliament gets a U.S. green card.
Right.
We can back up and say, whoa, 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 INS, are you paying attention to these things? Are you, you know, that seems like a giant glaring security risk right there. Like you with the U.S., under U.S. law, we don't recognize dual citizenship. You're either with us or not with us. That's pretty straightforward there. Apparently, under U.S. law, this guy's considered with us, except he's a member of the Chinese government. And no, you can't do both. So I think if I were a prosecutor, I would at least look. I'm not a prosecutor. I'm not a legal expert. But I look at that and I think you have a pretty good chance of persuading a jury that this guy was, in fact, an agent of the Chinese government and was, in fact, in violation of the law, which prohibits any American candidate. This is federal law, not a Virginia law. This is, you know, applies to everybody. You cannot accept donations from a foreign government. Or an agent of a foreign government. And that is, I think, this qualifies to this guy. Now, McAuliffe says, oh, I never met the guy. Okay, maybe I took him to Hillary Clinton's fundraiser. Okay, maybe we took a picture of him shaking Hillary Clinton's hand. This is kind of foreshadowing a corner post coming later today. Greg, I'm sure we can all point to past scandals that use this same playbook, but the idea of you vehemently deny everything initially, and then you wait a while, and you make a little concession. Okay, I did meet the guy. And then a little bit further on, well, okay, yeah, I took him to a Hillary fundraiser. Well, yeah, okay, my company did this business. And, you know, that bit by bit, you do this drip, drip, drip. And instead of people recognizing, oh, the initial denial was a total lie, you know, Terry McAuliffe went in front of the cameras and lied his face off. Instead, he's like, oh, God, why are we still talking about this? This is old news. Why are you so obsessed about this? This is what we saw from Clinton and the server, our first martini. You could apply it to Donald Trump, his donation to the veterans. It's now the playbook for politicians who may or may not have engaged in criminal behavior. When you get caught with your hand in the cookie jar, deny that it was your hand, deny that there was a cookie jar, deny that any cookies are missing. And then later admit bit by bit, yes, there are some crumbs on my bib, but there's a perfectly logical explanation for that. So it is a deeply frustrating set of circumstances, and you can't help but feel like it's being mainstreamed in our political culture.
All right, on to the crazy martini now. And this puts the media in a bad and a good light, in the beginning bad, but the reaction of the rest of the media has been good. Katie Couric, formerly of NBC, formerly of CBS, I think she's still with Yahoo, but she's just released a new documentary advocating gun control called Under the Gun, and she is now under the gun from gun rights supporters for a number of reasons. One is that she did actually interview a number of pro-gun rights people like John Lott and a couple of others, but didn't actually use any of those interviews in the story. Obviously, if you're putting together the documentary, that's your call. If you don't want to make it objective, that's your prerogative. But according to Molly Hemingway at The Federalist, and a lot of people have written on this, in Under the Gun, Couric asks a group of gun rights supporters, if there are no background checks for gun purchasers, how do you prevent felons or terrorists from purchasing a gun? The documentary filmmaker spliced in footage of the activist sitting silently for 9 seconds. One man looks down, seemingly uncomfortable during the awkward silence. The documentary then moves on to the next scene of a cylinder on a revolver being closed. Couric documentarians fabricated this moment, using a footage from a session that was unrelated to the question asked. In fact, according to audio of Couric's interview provided by the gun rights activists, they all rushed to respond to Couric, providing answers based on principle and practical concerns. Quote, "Well, one, if you're not in jail, you should still have your basic rights," unquote, said one of the gun owners. Others responded as well. When called on this, the film's director indirectly admitted she spliced in false footage and issued the following statement: "My intention was to provide a pause for the viewer to have a moment to consider this important question before presenting the facts on Americans' opinions on background checks. I never intended to make anyone look bad, and I apologize if anyone felt that way." CNN and the Washington Post both absolutely ripping not only the tactic, but the pathetic excuse. So, Jim, busted.
We're not stunned by this. I think what's particularly infuriating about this and qualifies as our crazy martini is the shamelessness of the excuse. "I just did that pause so people could contemplate the question." Well, then you put the answer afterwards, right? I mean, you know, like you can maybe, you know, it's a, I don't think there's particularly need for people to pause and contemplate the question because the question's been there. But when you don't put their actual answer in there, well, now you're just, you know, and you leave it the impression that they had no answer, that they were left stumped by your thought-provoking question. Well, now you're creating your editing process is designed to create something that is false. You know, this is all three of our martinis deal with lying today. And when called out on it, you know, that she offers this BS excuse of, "Oh, it's just a dramatic pause for, you know, contemplation of the question." And Katie Couric's comment didn't even say anything in the vein of, "We regret this. This was an editing mistake. We left a false impression. We shouldn't have done that. I'm proud of the work we did." Yeah. Look, Katie Couric is a propagandist. She's not a journalist. And part of being a journalist would be like, you want to get the story accurate. You want to get the story correct, factually true. When you put, you know, ask people for questions, you give the answers, and you don't show them, but you show the question, you are putting something false. And she absolutely deserves to be raked over the coals by this. It'll be a good test of Yahoo to see how seriously they take their mission of journalism, or whether they are, as some people was pointing out to me this morning, a search engine that just happens to have Katie Couric grafted to it.
Michael Moore has not been reached for comment. I'm sure he's used his tactic more than once. But Jim, on that note, have a wonderful Memorial Day weekend. I will talk to you on Tuesday.
See you Tuesday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. I am off on Friday, but Jim will be here, and there will be a Three Martini Lunch. We are off for Memorial Day. Have a great day, everyone, and thanks for listening to the Three Martini Lunch.